Hi, I'm Gail from Europod. Before enjoying your podcast, allow me to say a few words about Europe Talks Back. In the third season of Europe Talks Back, I want to uncover the topics that matter, or should matter, to all of us. From gender to bodies and sex, digital to migration and urban landscapes, and everything in between. Rather than focusing on macro-level policies, let's zoom in and talk to the brave activists and volunteers with lived experience, who are working directly with marginalized communities to further equity, justice, and liberation for all.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Europod.
Hi, Amelia. We finally got the word back for the Merkel interview. Good news. They granted us a spot. The interview will take place in 2 weeks from now, so that leaves you plenty of time to prepare. I'll forward you all the details right away. As already said before, you will only get one question, so you better make it a good one. I really don't need to remind you how many strings I had to pull to get this interview. Keep me posted about your prep, and don't hesitate to check everything with me. All the best, little one.
Little one? What a prick. Anyway, time to get to work. I've got some reading to do. I'm off to the public library.
Ich diesen Regierungsauftrag mit aller Kraft annehmen, denn...
Last time we left off on this. Merkel was about to make history by becoming Germany's first female chancellor. Chancellor Schröder had called for early elections. So Merkel only had a few months to prepare for her campaign. When the results came in, it was almost a tie. The CDU came first, but only 1% ahead of the SPD. When they learned the results, the candidates were on a TV set. And something unexpected happened. Schröder, the SPD leader and outgoing chancellor, lost it. He was all over the place, screaming, referring to Merkel as a younger who couldn't reasonably think of becoming chancellor. His sexism was palpable. He was unimaginably rude. Some spectators actually thought he was drunk. After that night, the SPD had lost in popularity. Its best solution was to agree to form a government in alliance with the CDU. Thus, became the Black and Red Alliance. And this, my friend, is how she became chancellor. Well played, Angie. My question to Angela Merkel.
La mia domanda ad Angela Merkel.
Ma question a Angela Merkel.
Mi pregunta Angela Merkel.
A Europod series. Episode 5. Lisbon Treaty. Angie's Treaty. Angela Merkel started her chancellorship just months after the collapse of the European Constitution Treaty. Let me refresh your memory. In 2005, after years of discussion and negotiation in Brussels, the EU drafted a European constitutional treaty with the aim to fix Brussels' problems and to, eventually, give more political gravitas to the European project. All countries had to sign off on those plans. And while countries asked their parliaments to ratify the treaty, others wished to hold referenda. History decided to derail the outcome.
Win, the yes needs a no to win.
Within 10 days, in late May, June 2005, both the French and the Dutch went no, nay. And just like that, those two no's, buried this project of a European constitution. Europe was in a disarray and at a political dead end. To end this political crisis, Europe needed leadership. But Francis Jacques Chirac lost his referendum and was now at the end of his mandate. And most European leaders did not have the political clout and legitimacy for everyone to haggle seriously. Quickly but surely, it seems the opening to fix this crisis will happen in 2007, while Angela Merkel and Germany will coordinate EU countries starting January the 1st of 2007. For half a year, she would be president of the European Union. Quick up on what that means. Every 6 months, the EU Council is headed by a country. This country is hereby president for half a year until it's another member's turn. No added authority comes with that role. It's rather the opportunity to give the Union an impulse in a certain direction. You get to head the discussions and to act as a kind of coordinator. This presidency arrives right on time for Angie. She knows she can't miss it. Why is this crucial? To put it bluntly, if Germany, the biggest power in the European Union, cannot find a solution, no one really can. And this could be the beginning of the end. She calls out EU country leaders, and everybody knows she's indirectly addressing France in particular. Her plan was rather simple. Even if the European Constitution failed, some of its ideas are necessary for the EU to work. Therefore, most of them should be recycled into a new treaty. That includes, to some extent, a more federal Europe, with a European Parliament having a say on most European laws, as well as fewer possibilities for EU countries to veto certain decisions. I decided to give Florence Autret another call. She reported extensively on those trialling years. So Merkel was really eager to lead the whole process of a renewal of Europe's political system. Why was that?
She wanted to save the federalization input of the Treaty of Lisbon, that is the reinforcement of the EU. Even though she did not trust the European Commission very much, she liked the idea of consolidating and better organizing the institutions.
The Treaty of Lisbon that you heard Autret referring to is the culminating point on our timeline. And it will take place in June 2007, only days before the end of the German presidency of the EU.
What is more, she did not want to dwell on failure.
Je veux dire, si on faisait pas Lisbonne,
if Lisbon was not happening, we would dwell on failed treaty. That was not possible.
C'était pas possible, en fait.
But this European enthusiasm wasn't just a pure impulse of europhilia, was it? It's just that it doesn't sound like Merkel.
Et de toute façon, on sait que depuis le traité de
Ever since the Treaty of Nice, all these institutional changes take part in the transcription in EU law of a new geopolitical situation created by the reunification of Germany. From now on, Germany and France are not equal anymore, as Germany accounts for 20 million people more than France and they are richer. Therefore, Germany became the most important European country, so much so that anything that reinforces the European system reinforces Germany in its lead. As such, it makes sense for Germany to put its house in order.
Pour l'Allemagne, c'est logique de mettre les choses en ordre, de définir.
So this new treaty is somehow adapting Europe to Germany's new demographic weight and political clout. Hence, it would mean more power for Germany. The German-French romance, that wasn't her cup of tea. Even if, I remember something that French Minister Michel Alliot-Marie said when I interviewed her. I want to check my recording.
Angela Merkel often talked to me about Jacques Chirac. For instance, she liked how he would greet her with a kiss on her hand.
I don't know about the hand kissing, but one thing's for sure. Europe was one of the most poisonous issues in French politics. And while Angela Merkel was haggling on a revamped treaty, the French would vote for their new president in May 2007. Angela Merkel could only hope for Jacques Chirac's successor to be a conservative as well. Nicolas Sarkozy, a man with a plan. And the name of that plan, same but different.
Ce traité simplifié, c'est la France.
Here's how he sees things. France can't go through a new referendum on this. So he has the idea of coming up with a new text. Similar enough to get the gist of the reforms that were prepared by the original treaty. But still different enough so that people wouldn't see the, well, scam. The episode helped establish the working relationship between the two leaders, which was difficult at first.
At first, it was more difficult for her to establish a relationship of trust with Nicolas Sarkozy. Then, as their discussions progressed, she was able to do so. It was a necessity for both. Moreover, Merkel is someone very much action-oriented.
But we must also leave the relationship between Berlin and Paris aside to understand Europe. One thing that surprised me in my reporting is what happened in March 2007. All European leaders are in Berlin to celebrate the 50th anniversary of another treaty. This time, the Treaty of Rome, which created the European Economic Community, the older sister of the EU we know today. It is a big test for Angela Merkel. If she wants all the EU countries to agree on a new treaty, now is the time to present her best arguments.
Vorsitzende des Europäischen Rates, freue ich mich sehr, Sie hier in Berlin.
In an eloquent speech, she takes the fall of the Berlin Wall as an example, or as a symbol, rather, of what Europe should thrive towards. If they had to say goodbye to a European constitution, they shouldn't give up on renewing the face of European politics. But the most interesting, as most summaries of that sort, happened backstage. Merkel takes the very conservative Polish leader Lech Kaczynski aside when he hesitates on giving his green light. Angela Merkel spoke about her youth, why she believed in the European project. She, who knows what it means to have lived on the wrong side of the Iron Curtain, like Poland and the ex-Soviet satellite states who joined the bloc in 2004. And if she believes in Europe, so can he. Reading about this made me realize something. The shows I watched, the articles I read about Merkel, they all took on a Western European perspective. Much like European politics in general, it was dominated by a sort of Western gaze. And that's a shame, because that's one of Merkel's great assets in the EU. She is a privileged interlocutor for Eastern European countries. She understands them. The journalist Florence Autré.
Je crois que pour comprendre ça,
to understand this, one needs to go back, without retracing all her life, to the fact that the biggest difference between Merkel and the other Western leaders in Europe was that she did not grow up attached to this mythology of the French-German couple. She does not ignore it. However, as she grew up in East Germany, her representation of the world opposed the communist bloc against the capitalist bloc. According to her, the European Union, or the European communities at the time, is not something concrete. It is a part of the Western camp.
For years now, Europe and Angela Merkel have witnessed how the governments of those countries have put the rule of law and human rights in peril. In Poland, women's rights are being violated, and the justice system is losing its independence. Meanwhile, in Hungary, freedom of press and of academics is being jeopardized, and the LGBTQ community is increasingly being victim of the institutionalized discrimination and violence. To top it off, corruption is booming in both their political spheres. This is what Judith Dempsey told me about Merkel's relationship with Eastern Europe. Dempsey is a well-renowned journalist and senior fellow at Carnegie Europe.
So Merkel could have been much, much tougher. Why didn't she? Because of the past. I don't think Merkel wants Germany to be seen to be ganging up on Poland and Hungary and other Eastern Central European countries because of the legacy of the past. I don't think we can underestimate this. That's the first point. And secondly, despite so few proper speeches on Europe, Merkel didn't want this kind of East-West divide to be permanent.
Germany had been a strong advocate for the 2004 enlargement. There was a historical reason for this. Before World War II, there was an important German diaspora in Eastern and Central Europe. After the war, Hungary, Poland, Czechoslovakia, as well as the Balkans, expelled Germans from their territory. Some of them had been living in these areas for generations. So there's a strong historical bond between the Germans and those countries. But even if she doesn't want the East-West divide to be permanent, it still very much exists today. On the 3rd of December 2020, an open letter was signed by 13 organizations advocating for human rights and transparency. It's addressed to Merkel. At the time, Merkel was heading the presidency of the EU. And like every time Germany takes on the presidency, expectations are high. This is just one example. The sole fact that we are asking ourselves who's going to handle that debate once Merkel's gone, that tells us a lot about how very much present the East-West divide still is, and how difficult dialogue between the two remains to this day. I remembered that the professor in comparative politics at University of Missouri, Joyce Mushaben, had told me something about that.
I think she has close relationships with the countries. She doesn't have a close relationship with these horrible, terrible, nationalistic, populistic leaders who are rolling back on democratic institutions and reforms. Kaczynski in Poland or Orban in Hungary. Those are difficult cases. She still has a lot of empathy and sympathy and, you know, understands the history of those countries, understands the needs of those countries, and they love her.
But Eastern countries don't want to be West-blamed about what the rule of law is. And the way that France and Germany wanted to use the latest revival budget as a leverage on Hungary and Poland is symptomatic of that structural imbalance. And who knows what effect Merkel's departure will have on that. In the end, the Lisbon Treaty was a victory. She handled negotiations and closed the deal. As the year of 2007 came to an end, the treaty was signed, and 2 years later, it would become effective. It enhanced citizens' participation and gave more power to the parliament, which meant more democratic transparency. But don't get too comfortable, Angie, because if you are on a clock this time, there was no ticking bomb. Something's about to crash, and with no warning sign. My question to Angela Merkel.
La mia domanda ad Angela Merkel.
Ma question a Angela Merkel.
Mi pregunta Angela Merkel.
A Europod series.
Do you want to hear more podcasts that get to the bottom of things that stand out in the ambient noise? Join Europod. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and our newsletter. Follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. Discover our brand new website at www.europod.eu and join us in our fight. Europod. Clear the noise. Start to listen.